I'm Mike Greenberg. Delighted you have chosen to get up with us. Our Football Power Index gives the Tampa Bay Buccaneers the seventh best chance to win the Super Bowl. We'll do the Goldilocks treatment. Is that too high, too low, or just right?
I'm going Mama Bear here, Greeny. I think it's just right.
I think you may have mixed up your bears. It's Baby Bear who thinks everything is just right. But let's not get sidetracked. The suit bet that got canceled, you know, in the NBA.
Oh, canceled! Canceled! Canceled!
It's canceled.
Greeny, bets don't work like that, sir.
We're both wrong. It was Goldilocks who found everything just right.
No.
Yes. You are strongly in belief that the Lions will have a better record than the Jets this year.
I'm not strongly believing it. I'm guaranteeing it.
No. It was always Baby Bear.
Prove it wrong.
I will. No problem.
I'll prove it wrong.
Stop it. I'll prove it wrong easily. Papa Bear's stuff was too hot. Mama's Bear's was too cold. However, Baby Bear right in the middle, always just right.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure we're getting anywhere with this, but and I know for certain we should just leave it alone. It's a fun week. We're doing the best we can to have as much fun with you here every morning as we possibly can, and we so appreciate you being with us every single morning. And we have a huge hour coming your way with lots of NBA news, lots from the NFL, and a few special comments about the particular times in which we are living. So we're looking forward to it and glad that you are here. Let's get it rolling. Another hour of Get Up. It's time to roll with a huge day in the NBA. Decision day. And we've got it covered. Jaylen, Jay Will, and JVG all standing by. It's going to be great. Then the time has come to pay the piper, or at least to pay the best player in the league. How much is too much? Once and for all, they decide now. And the coach speaks about what his draft means to his legendary quarterback. I'll tell you why history tells a completely different story as we get up with you, starting right now with Get Up and Go. Here we go. NFL owners have tabled a proposal that would have given teams a 4th-and-15 alternative to the onside kick. Teams that have attempted expected onside kicks are 0-104 over the past 2 years, according to NFL data. I was hoping that would pass. It did not. Meanwhile, with the 2020 minor league baseball season likely to be canceled, hundreds of minor league players were cut yesterday, and hundreds more are expected to lose their jobs as well. Minor league teams had already begun laying off front office and game day workers in recent weeks. Two of the big European soccer leagues, two of the top leagues, set to return to play dates on Thursday. The English Premier League will restart on June 17th. The Italian government, meanwhile, approved a June 20th return date for their top league. And Chase Elliott took home his elusive first cup victory of the season in a rain-delayed race at Charlotte last night. Elliott had suffered two frustrating losses in NASCAR's three prior cup races since the series resumed on May 17th. And now to the NBA, where the Board of Governors is set to meet today as the league tries to figure out how to resume the season, and how to put together a playoff format. We had Brian Windhorst earlier this morning hearing about a specific scenario for one particular team. Listen to this.
One of the things I've been hearing as I've talked to people in the league is going to set up this playoff plan to make sure Zion Williamson is involved. Now, I have to tell you, Greeny, that paranoia is at the top of the list with anything in the NBA. The league is screwing me, and they're helping that guy. And in this case, you know, there's a number of different reasons why the league would want to have 20 or 24 teams. And when you look at some of these proposals, it basically involves adding extra West teams and making sure the 10th place, or including at least the 10th place New Orleans Pelicans.
And we are ready to talk about this with Jaylen Rose and Jay Williams. I'm not even going to ask a question because, Jaylen, I can tell from your face
Greeny.
Yeah.
Does this mean that if Zion makes the playoffs, do you and I win our suit?
Well, suit bet.
Does that happen?
That's a factor in this. Is that, Jaylen, where you were going? Because I can see from your face you're ready to roll.
I am ready to roll, and I didn't think about my bet, but you're right, Jay. I'm about to make a cut nose, despite face moment on live television. I'm going to put Zion in the playoffs with you guys and lose my bet, because that's what I've been saying. Look at the Western Conference. You got Luka, you got Ja, you got Dame, you got Zion. That's 7 through 10. I've already said 10 teams from each conference engage 20 fan bases, 21 through 30. Thanks for coming out. God bless you. Good night. Get ready for the lottery. And in the Eastern Conference, we might get John Wall to play with Bradley Beal, who averaged 30 points this year. You know you got to get the young studs in West involved in this. I've tried to tell you guys, genius by Adam Silver if he pulls this off.
I'm calling it the Jalen Rose plan because you were the first one I heard to put that one together here on this show last week. Now, Jay, Will, here's the question I want to ask you. And I think you're the perfect person to begin it with. Because first and foremost, the NBA, like all sports leagues, their primary concern has to be the integrity of competition. It is a competition to win a championship, and that competition has to have integrity. It goes without saying. But they're also in the entertainment business. And they're in the business of putting on a show that fans want to see, maybe right now at this particular time more than ever. So where is the line between those two things right now, and how should they be taking into account the entertainment piece of this and candidly the business piece of this as they make the decisions on how they will return and how that will impact the integrity of the competition?
I think when you get, you know, and Jalen talks about that 7-10 model, I think when you get to that, as much as teams like Memphis or teams in those positions, Orlando, the Brooklyn Nets may be frustrated about it, I do think that this is an anomaly. And this is an outlier type of year, Greeny. And having a pandemic, all the things that are factoring into this from a league revenue perspective, in conjunction with integrity to a degree. But I think even, you know, soliciting pool play to a degree is what we're talking about. If you're able to implement that, I think that you're able to use this as a test trial for different types of ideas that can lead into the future. And I think this is a huge growth opportunity for the league to try all these different things out. You know, we even talked about yesterday in the show about the 1-16 seeding and just take away the Eastern and Western Conference. Mm-hmm. This is a chance for them to see and use this as a focus group test amongst all fans to see, hey, can this style be something that can lead generations in the future that can keep engagement at a very high level? So I think you're going to see the league try new things, which I'm not opposed to. And integrity will be compromised to a degree, but we might have a new norm moving forward.
I think that's well said. I want to make it very clear what we're talking about. The games themselves will have integrity. I'm talking about if they make decisions this year that gives this team a chance, gives this star player a chance to be involved in the show that they return with, Jalen. I guess I'm saying that's okay with me, even if it doesn't seem fair or it doesn't seem as though it goes by the same principles they've always used in the past. It's okay with me. Is it okay with you?
It's okay with me because if you think about it, I don't see adding four more teams to be messing with the integrity of the game because we only play 80% of the regular season. Mm. And yes, there are a few teams that had their spots on lock, like Dallas, for example. But other than that, like Memphis is up 3.5 games in the West. Anything can happen over the last 18 games, and injuries come into play as well. So it's not like they were able to get to a handful of games and the season ended. So for me, them being back on the floor creates a level of optimism. And when you put it together, the integrity is going to play itself out because the best basketball teams are going to always win because ultimately 7-game series decide that.
Jay Williams, do you think we have – I posted something the other day. Like, I think we have a chance for this to be one of the best summers the NBA ever had. I mean, taken just strictly based upon the level of interest that I think will be involved, the level of excitement fans will have, and I think the level of competition they have a chance to put on the floor with all these guys kind of rested and all of them in one place. They can try new and different things that maybe will lead to future changes. I think they have a chance, if everything breaks their way, and of course, if everyone can be made safe to do it, that goes without saying, to have really a spectacular show to put on this summer.
I mean, I remember when we had the lockout year and summer basketball was just incredible. Summer basketball, Jay Rose, you know this. Like, it's always been street basketball. It's always been an incredible thing to watch when you see all the footage on the internet and social media and things of that sort. I think this year, the fact that, and this might be the new norm, Greeny. I mean, if you start next season around December, January, this might be the new norm moving forward. And I'm okay. I love summer basketball. Remember, you're punching down. You're punching down against MLB. Look at everything that's happening with Major League Baseball right now. They're not able to get their footing underneath them. This is a prime opportunity for the NBA to take that type of leadership during that time.
Jalen, final thought.
Yeah, a few of those things, I agree with Jay. Going to get an NBA a chance to see if they can implement them going forward. Players won't love summer basketball because it takes you away from your family, in particular your kids when they're out of school. But for the business model of the NBA, it gives you a chance to make them new NBA fans. The 1-16 seeding is something that you guys know that I'm excited about as well. So
These are going to be opportunities this season, and we'll be enthusiastic if we see any basketball.
All right, guys, stay close. We have a lot more hoops to come as we continue this morning, but we have a very important business deal to get to in the National Football League, and that involves the best player in the sport. We all watched in awe as Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs to one come-from-behind win after another in the playoffs last year and ultimately, of course, won the Super Bowl. Now, he has 2 years left on his deal, but he has already begun discussions with the team to extend the contract. That's according to the Kansas City Star. And Sam Mellinger tweeted this. The most anticipated contract negotiation in NFL history is underway between the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. The result will be a deal unlike any other with potential new precedents that could change future talks. Our football crew is ready. Louis Riddick is with me this morning. Rob Ninkovich. And Dan Graziano is here as well, our insider. And Dan, I'll start with you. Like, specifically, what might we be talking about there when he says things that could change future talks? What could we be discussing there?
There's any number of things that could be discussing, including, you know, obviously full guarantees and, you know, can you tie the contract to percentage growth of the salary cap and a lot of things that have been talked about in recent years in other big quarterback deals. I'm going to believe it when I see it, right? Because obviously Patrick Mahomes deserves to be the highest paid guy, and I believe he will be. I do not believe, based on the conversations I've had, that he's going to cut the Chiefs any kind of bargain deal here. But I look back at Andrew Luck, at Russell Wilson, at Aaron Rodgers' contract negotiations, and I was hearing a lot of the same things before those. And while those guys all got great deals, nobody really changed anything about the contract landscape other than Kirk Cousins, who got a fully guaranteed deal when he made it all the way to free agency. So I'm watching closely to see if Patrick Mahomes is going to exercise his leverage to max out the deal in some new unprecedented way that helps future quarterbacks. If he's going to do that, then it's highly unlikely this deal gets done this summer or next summer because he's going to have to push the Chiefs to a point where they have to confront the idea of life without them. That is how you maximize your leverage. That's how you really establish new contract benchmarks.
All right, Louis, you've been in the room where it happens on things like this. So I want to preface my question by saying I believe Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the league, and I God bless him. I hope he gets every penny he possibly can in his life. But if you're in there and you're making decisions based upon paying the best player in the league and still being able to maintain a roster that can win Super Bowls, how do you do that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, look, Patrick's job is not to manage your salary cap from a salary cap management standpoint. That's not his job. So really, it's not one of these situations where, you know, that's his responsibility, nor does that need to be on the forefront of his mind. I think obviously you tried to communicate and you tried to explain to him, hey, look, we understand how important you are to us, and we have made it no secret how important you are to us, and we know that this contract is going to be record setting. We know it's going to be talked about in sports media for a long time, and we're fully prepared for that. But that being said, understand, we can pay you as much as you potentially want. You know, we can pay you this kind of money, but understand that there's going to be some consequences if we cannot keep all these weapons around you that we have already accumulated when those people come up for contract extensions because of the fact that we just don't have the money to pay you. So I think that's the kind of thing you need to be upfront, you need to be open about, you need to communicate to him about, but I don't think you do it with the intent of him saying, oh, you know what, I'm going to cut you a little bit of a break. Look, he deserves what's coming to him. The Chiefs know that. The Chiefs are prepared for that. We know where the floor is going to be as far as average per year and with guaranteed money at signing, meaning when he signs his name, it's not a provisional guarantee. It's not some guarantee if he meets some kind of criteria down the future or if he's on the roster. It's the money that's coming to him immediately. They know that that's going to be record-breaking. They know it's going to blow the doors off of the top of this market. And that's what he obviously should be striving for. But I think at the same time, that again, they will communicate to him that, look, we have to make sure that we take care of the rest of this roster if you want to continue to win at a high level.
All right, Ninkovich, there's no way to avoid this part of the conversation. You played all those years with Brady, and he routinely took less money than he might otherwise have made, and you guys did a whole lot of winning. What impact do you think Tom Brady's contract situation had on all the success the Patriots have had?
Well, I mean, it had a big impact. Look, when you have the best quarterback in the NFL taking a little bit less, when you're a linebacker or DB or tight end and you go to the negotiating table and they say, look, we can't give you the highest paying contract. Look, the best quarterback in the NFL is making less. I mean, it changes the whole dynamic of just shaping the roster and your cap availability to give it to other players. So when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, They asked, hey, what do you want, Mahomes? Pat Mahomes, what do you want? Because the ball's in your court. You want to pay, be the highest paid quarterback? This might affect you down the road. If you want to take a little bit less, we might be able to win 4, 5, 6. I don't know. So it's going to be up to him. It's going to be up to the team to try and manage this whole thing to where both sides are happy. At the end of the day, this is a potential overproduction league, and he has both of those. He has production, he has potential, he has all that. So he deserves everything that he's about to get.
We will see how much they were willing to rob Peter to pay Patrick. Guys, stay close. We have more football coming up in a minute. Different quarterback that we need to talk about. It appears to be all love, if you will, between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. The question is, how long is that going to last? History says not very long. We'll explain coming up. And then, what was it like to try to stop Michael Jordan? We will ask someone who knows. When Jeff Van Gundy joins us later in this hour, it's Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and there remains plenty of speculation about the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and his head coach, Matt LaFleur, ever since the team traded up to take Jordan Love in the draft last month. Yesterday, LaFleur downplayed any concerns about the nature of that relationship. Here's what he said.
We talk 4 times a week whenever we get those opportunities to meet in those individual meetings. And I feel really good about where we're at. You know, we both understand that this is a business. And when that whole thing went down, it was just one of those situations where there were a couple guys targeted that had just previously been picked. And Jordan was the next guy on the board. And so we went with the best player at the time.
So that's interesting. And the dynamics there of Rodgers' contract will play a large role into how this plays out. We talked a lot about what this means long term. I want to focus on the short term for a minute here. Rob Ninkovich, the relationship between the coach and Aaron Rodgers, what does that have to be and what has to happen for that to be okay enough for this team to try and make a run at a Super Bowl this year, which they should be thinking about having been 13-3 a year ago?
Well, you got to have respect. It goes both ways. So when you're playing with a Hall of Fame quarterback or coaching a Hall of Fame quarterback, there has to be respect there. And that goes back to the head coach. When you're in front of your team, you have to have respect as a player to your head coach, because the second that that relationship is stressed in front of the team and other players see that, that is not good for the team and the chemistry. So they could talk 4 times a week, and they might not see eye to eye, and Rodgers might be upset that they went up and drafted a quarterback in the first round. But at the end of the day, Rodgers is going to have a fire underneath him. He's going to be motivated to go out there and win football games because of the fact that they traded up for a quarterback to replace him. He's motivated. There's a chip on his shoulder. I can guarantee that. So the relationship there between the coach and the player, it has to be good in front of the team. If you start to have any issue in front of the team, that's when the chemistry can go and fall apart, and that can hurt your team.
Lewis, obviously these were things that they had to know were going to come into play when they made this decision. So how does it get handled from here in the short run to make sure it works?
Yeah, I think you have to overemphasize communication. You have to kind of make up for the fact that you really weren't proactive in terms of communicating with your franchise quarterback before the draft in terms of, look, it could be a possibility that we move up to draft a quarterback if things fall a certain way here in the first round. Those are the kinds of you know, that's the kind of communication that you really afford a guy of Aaron Rodgers' accomplishments. It's just something that everyone does in the NFL. It's the same as, like, look, when I was in the front office, you know, everyone was treated fairly, but not everyone was treated the same, especially when you're talking about, like, releasing players, right? Certain players didn't get a call from the head coach or general manager when you got released. Scouts and personnel directors handled it. But when big name players and players who carried a lot of weight in the organization were released, certain head coaches and general managers handled that kind of thing personally. So right now, handing Aaron Rodgers personally and making sure that you continue to foster this relationship for however long it lasts still is something that has to be very important to Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst, the general manager. It just has to. Otherwise, as Rob's alluding to, if it starts falling apart, the other players are going to see it too. And players will follow their leaders, man. And if the leader isn't getting on well with management, then the rest of the team isn't either. And the next thing you know, everybody's going to be getting replaced. So they have to make sure they handle it.
Which brings us, Graziano, to the long-term look at this. And what, based upon the contract situation, what are the different ways this thing could go?
Well, look, I mean, they could, if Jordan Love is hypothetically ready to go in 2021, and if 2020 doesn't go particularly well, the Packers could find a way to get out of Aaron Rodgers' contract next year by designating him a post-June 1st cut and splitting the dead salary cap money up over 2 years. Realistically, the decision probably doesn't come until the 2022 offseason, at which point, you know, the contract is obviously very tradable. His salary's not crazy high for, obviously, for a quarterback of his accomplishments. So you look at that 2022 offseason as one where they could decide to move on again if, capital I, capital F, if Jordan Love is the quarterback they think he's going to be and if he's ready to go at that time. A lot has to happen in order to get to that situation. But one quick thing to Lewis's point, we talked to Brian Gutekunst, the GM, before the draft, and he said he has had conversations with Aaron Rodgers about the team's philosophy on drafting quarterbacks and that Rodgers understood. So it's not as if it was a complete blindside. The front office had laid some groundwork with Rodgers ahead of the draft to try and prepare him for that possibility.
All right, so we will see where all of that goes short term and long. Guys, stay with me. I want to make sure everyone knows what's coming up tonight on ESPN. It's an all-new E60. It's called Imperfect, on the baseball career and troubled life off the field of the Hall of Fame right-handed pitcher Roy Halladay, who died piloting his own plane in 2017. For 10 years, Halladay was the most dominant starting pitcher in baseball. But after he was injured during the 2012 season, everything started to change. Here's John Barr.
After trying multiple methods of physical therapy, Halladay began taking prescription opioids to manage his back pain in the spring of 2012. According to his wife, he obtained the pills not from a team doctor, but by paying cash to a doctor in Florida that was recommended to him by a Phillies teammate.
He was continuing to hurt himself, and the more he hurt himself, the more dependent he would be on medication. He was breaking his back. He actually shrunk 3 inches from compression in his spine. That's insane.
It's a remarkable story. You can watch the all-new E60 titled Imperfect about Hall of Fame pitcher Roy Halladay struggles with pain and addiction tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Coming up, it's an enormous day for the future of the NBA. What is the best comeback plan? I've got a lot of questions for Jeff Van Gundy, who joins us live next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and today's a very big day in the NBA where the Board of Governors is set to meet after Adam Silver held a call with league general managers yesterday. Our Adrian Wojnarowski reporting today's call is not expected to include a formal vote on a return to play plan, but it certainly does feel as though those plans are coming into place. And there is a lot of basketball to be talked, and it has been a very long time since I've had a chance to talk about it with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, thank you very much for doing this. It's great to see you. And I want to start with something different, because the world, as you well know, has been talking a lot about Michael Jordan this month. And you and I, in different ways, got our start with him. I was covering him, and I've been thinking a lot about that time. How would you describe all these years later what it was like to coach against Michael Jordan?
Well, I think those teams led by Jordan were incredible what they accomplished. You know, it's obvious. But I think how they accomplished it is a little bit misunderstood, especially against a team like the Knicks. I thought offensively they were good, led by Jordan's greatness. But where they were superior for us was that we just had a hard time scoring. Their defense was outstanding. And the second part, because you tried to double Jordan, particularly late, where they hurt us was with second shots. We had a hard time both doubling Jordan and keeping him off the offensive board. So they were well put together teams, but they were put together around his greatness and around the consistency of tremendous defense and outstanding rebounding.
You know, what came through in the films that we showed about him over the course of the last month or so was just the insane competitiveness. I mean, anyone to get to the level that you were at and have been at in the NBA, coaching, playing, et cetera, has to have some level of competitiveness. Was there something different about the way he approached it from what you could see from anybody else that seemed to set him apart?
Well, I think, obviously, like you just said, I think a lot of guys in our league have great competitive instincts. And I was fortunate to coach someone like Patrick Ewing, who had every bit as much competitiveness as anybody else. But I think what Jordan did was he had that great competitive streak coupled with incredible athleticism and a skill set that he developed over time, which allowed him to combine all three of those to become arguably the best player who's ever played.
It's been fun for me sort of looking back at all that time here over the course of the last few weeks. Meantime, let's look forward now. Let's get to the present. So if they were to call you up today and ask your opinion about how they should structure coming back and putting together whatever they're going to do to finish their season and then playing for a championship, what would you advise?
Well, I think there's so many options, and none of them are great, right? And the season has been disrupted like no season ever before. And so I think all the teams have to have a big picture vision of this, because everybody wants to capitalize and make as much money as they can. TVs, people, owners, players, coaches, all of them, right? So we get that. And then they're going to have to be some element of sacrifice to make it the best for the fans as well. And so to me, I've never liked the idea of a play-in. I wanted to see it be structured as the 16 best teams like I've always wanted it to be. But I do understand this year is different. They may have to do something to maximize the money and to create what I would see as gimmicks in a normal year. But as we all know, this is anything but a normal year.
Yeah, of course. If you were, because Mark Lazary was saying the other day, maybe they bring back all 30 teams. It doesn't seem likely that's what will happen. But if you were coaching now, for example, Golden State or the Knicks or another team that is out of it, and they said, for the good of the game, we want you to come back and play some games and finish things up, how would you feel about doing that?
Well, I would feel about it just like I would if you were asking them to finish the regular season uninterrupted. Those last 15 games are drudgery for non-playoff teams and the teams that are so far out of it, like Golden State. And so you do a mix of play your veterans, play your young guys, experiment in some ways without compromising the integrity of the game. And I think every team should be more than willing to come back and more than willing to finish the season, because in a normal season, that's exactly what you would be asked to do, and you should be willing to do that now.
Jeff, you mentioned gimmickry a moment ago, and so let's look at some of the possibilities there. It feels like this is an opportunity to try some different stuff. So I have long wondered, in fact, I've long espoused the idea that if you just took the 16 best teams in the NBA and you seeded them 1 through 16 and took the conference out of it, that you might have a better postseason and you might have a chance for a better finals. And I've always been told travel is the reason that you can't do it. Well, that isn't going to be a problem if everybody is in Orlando. So what do you think of the idea of seeding them 1 through 16 and playing it out that way?
I've long been a believer in what you believe there. I think it should be the 16 best records. I think the regular season should be structured east and west. And after that, when you get to the playoffs, you take the 16 best records and you seed them accordingly. Is that fair? Not totally, but I do think it brings your chance to have the 16 best teams in the playoffs. I think it helps. And I think the whole travel restriction thing is overblown. They fly on charter flights. They have the best food. They have the best ability to rejuvenate their bodies. I don't want to hear about, oh, we can't do it because the shrimp may not be chilled by landing if we have to go across the country. So stop all that nonsense. And particularly in this year, Mike, I would have no problem if you seeded it 1 through 16 if it's in one place. I think it would give you a good look to see, is this something we want to pursue down the road? But please stop with this. Travel would prohibit it when you're on charter flights and you're eating the best food and you have many, many people participating and helping the players feel their best and perform their best.
I love it. I'm with you 100% of the way. Jeff Van Gundy, when we were interrupted 2 months ago, who did you think was going to win the championship?
I thought Milwaukee was going to win it. I think they had the best combination of defense and offense and star player. I think they also, with the East, had the easiest path to the finals and were not going to be challenged very strongly by anybody in the East. Now, to me, it really, I have no idea after 4 months. This is, to me, Mike, this is a whole different season that we have coming up. The 19-20 season, it's done. It's completed. All we're bringing forward is our record and our rosters. But you don't know how fearful individual players are going to be. You don't know what they've been able to do. You don't know, particularly coming back like this, about injuries. There are so many variables that this is a whole new season, and I have no idea of what to expect, nor what the rules are and what the format's going to be.
Well, I guess we'll wait and find that out. Let's talk about the West, because I think the last game, I know it was the last game that I watched before it all got called off, and I think you were doing the game, was Lakers-Clippers, which are the two best teams in the Western Conference. And there was LeBron putting on an extraordinary show and beating the Clippers 2 days after he had beaten Giannis and the Bucks. So I guess I would ask you that about the West. Who did you think was going to come out of the West when we got called off?
Well, it's hard to bet against LeBron and Anthony Davis, but I do think the Clippers have the best built roster for long-term playoff success. I love their team. I love how Lawrence Frank and Doc Rivers have put that thing together. And I think they are a terrific, terrific team. And what was interesting is if that would have been a Western Conference final, home court to me, obviously, if it was between those two, would have had no bearing. I mean, think about, you have no advantage, really. You're playing in the same arena for 2 weeks. It would have been absolutely fascinating to see a Western Conference final competed in the same arena for seven games.
Yeah, and look, it would have been basically seven home games for the Lakers if you judge from the way the fans sounded in that game. Maybe we wind up getting that in Orlando between these teams, but all other things being equal, I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. You like Milwaukee. If I say to you right now, everyone's going to come back and be the same, your prediction is you think Milwaukee wins the whole thing.
I do. I love their defense, and I love their depth, and Giannis's intensity and ability to draw two people going to the rim is exceptional. Like I said, the battle through the West may sharpen them more than what Milwaukee will have to travel through. So that's, I think, an advantage for the Western Conference team that ultimately comes out. But in the end, I think Milwaukee's the best team.
Let's see what it is. Let's see if maybe they don't even do East-West this year. I guess we'll find all of that out. Jeff, it's great to see you again. Thank you very much, my man. You be safe. The best of the family, and hopefully we'll check in soon as they start this thing up again.
Absolutely, Mike. Take care.
That's Jeff Van Gundy with us here. And we have a lot more to do on our program, and I'll remind you, about 20 minutes away, it's time for First Take. Max and Neek today debating whether there should be an asterisk for this year's NBA champion if the season should resume. That and more on the way this morning on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
The death of George Floyd in Minneapolis has sparked protests and outrage across the country, including within the world of sports. Floyd died while in handcuffs after a police officer kneeled on his neck. Floyd, who was black, did not have a gun. Several athletes have posted on social media to express their shock and their anger. Among them, Magic Johnson, who wrote, quote, George Floyd was clearly murdered by a Minneapolis police officer. How many times do we have to see black men killed on national television? This has been going on for entirely too long. We need to start seeing black people as human beings and not animals on the street. Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz wrote yesterday, I can't even fathom what the black community has to endure on a daily basis. Being from North Dakota, I've spent a large part of my life surrounded by people of similar color, so I'm never going to act like I know what the black community goes through or even has gone through already. I'll never know the feeling of having to worry about my kids going outside because of their skin color. Steph Curry posted this on Instagram in part, George didn't deserve to die. George pleaded for help and was just straight up ignored, which speaks loud and clear that his black life didn't matter. George was murdered. George wasn't human to that cop that slowly and purposefully took his life away. J.J. Watt also had a strong reaction.
I've seen the video and I think it's disgusting. I think that there's no explanation for it. I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense. I just don't see how a man in handcuffs on the ground who is clearly detained and clearly saying in distress, I don't understand how that situation can't be remedied in a way that doesn't end in his death. I think that it needs to be addressed strongly, obviously. And I don't see how that situation makes any sense whatsoever. And I think it's anybody who saw the video, anybody who, I don't know how you can defend it. I mean, it's terrible. It's extremely difficult to watch, and I mean, it's upsetting, and so I don't understand it.
The four officers involved in Floyd's arrest were fired. Floyd's death is under investigation by the FBI and state law enforcement authorities. In response, the University of Minnesota has said it will no longer be using local police to assist at major events, including football games. Minnesota Timberwolves coach Ryan Saunders called a team meeting in the wake of this, and he told ESPN, quote, I'm a white male in a position of leadership, and I don't take lightly the fact that I have not experienced some of these things that our individual guys have had to experience. So I wanted to make sure that we could become more educated as people completely inexperienced in never getting the benefit of the doubt. I'd like to think that at our best, our show is a place where we can have conversations about things like this. And so I've asked Jalen and Lewis Riddick and Dominique Foxworth to join us this morning. And Anik, you write for The Undefeated, and I'll start with you. What role can the sports community play in trying to bring about real change and healing?
Well, I think right now I'm happy to see all of the players speak up, particularly the white ones. But I do think that this is an easy time to speak up. And we need them, while I applaud them, we need them to speak up when it's not easy. And I think kneeling during the national anthem is an example of that. We don't need to forget these things because there are going to be months that go by. And just like we can go back to Tamir Rice or any of the other myriad of cases, those people forget. And we don't talk about it and we move on. And the idea of what Kaepernick was doing was to make sure that we don't forget and we don't move on. So I think that's one thing that players can do specifically is find ways to keep this in the forefront and also stand up when it is not easy. And as far as the leagues and the teams, I think back to 91, I think it was, when the NFL took the Super Bowl from Arizona because they would not recognize Martin Luther King Day as a holiday. So I think that the leagues have that power. You can think back to the All-Star game for basketball when they threatened North Carolina for not changing the bathroom law. They threatened to take away the All-Star game there. Like, the leagues have power. So in places like Minneapolis right now, there are things that they can do there are things that they can request as a league before they go back to operate in that state, in the state of Minnesota or in the city of Minneapolis. There are things that they can request as far as getting justice in this particular case.
Lewis Riddick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think first and foremost, I think athletes and sports overall, as Dominique just alluded to, both black and white, need to demand that people are held accountable for what has happened. What has happened now, what has happened in the past, and what inevitably is probably going to happen in the future. Because there is no quick fix to this. But I think what you are seeing athletes doing by way of the stage that they have, by way of the platform that they have, is something that they need to continue to do. And again, it needs to be emphasized. It can't just be us minorities or African Americans. It has to be all people. And the white athletes who are now stepping up need to continue to step up and need to continue to voice the fact that this cannot be normalized. The kind of things that you're seeing on TV right now, as far as, you know, black men being killed in the streets, cannot be normalized. And in a sense, it is being normalized, because it is then just moved on, and then it's just on to whatever the next thing that is happening in society. And then, as far as, you know, really the important conversation surrounding how do you correct this, how do you then start to fix what is going on in our society? Look, Dwayne The Rock Johnson just said, you know, on his Instagram this morning, he said, how do you normalize equality? How do you have that become the narrative? How do you have that become what is pervasive in our society? And, you know, with sports, it's interesting. It's interesting. Like at this point in time, everybody wants sports to come back, as, you know, and have it be some kind of escape, some way to escape all the things that we see happening. When really, you know what sports is going to really do, and what sports many times does? It leads the way. Because when you're talking about normalizing equality on the football field, you know, which is my arena, which is Dominique's arena, on the basketball court, which is Jalen's arena, equality is something that is normalized on those playing fields. Because look, we play next to people who are not minorities, who are not African American. We're all out there for a common goal and looking after each other and looking and kind of like having each other's back. How do we have that become something that becomes normalized in society overall? Because right now, and you know what, I don't know where that leadership is going to come from. I don't know where in society, where is that leadership going to come from? It shouldn't be sports' responsibility to do that. But maybe, you know, in essence, it is partly sports' responsibility, because no one else seems to be taking it up right now. Because right now, look, we know what the problems are, but we don't have a lot of solutions. And maybe sports is part of the solution, because we've kind of had the blueprint. We've kind of shown the blueprint as far as how people can work together and how equality can be normalized in a sense on the court and on the football field. Although there's work to do in that area too, when we're talking about minority hiring and all that, which is a whole different subject. But maybe sports does need to play a bigger role than just to have people escape. Because right now we are devoid of leadership. We are devoid of a path. We're devoid of a plan. And that is a very scary, scary thing, speaking from a black man's perspective. That is a very, very scary thing.
Well said, Jalen.
So I want America to know that all black people have been waking up with a heavy heart. And I've seen people like still show up to do their jobs because they're professionals. And you guys did a terrific job of setting this up, but I have to say this. I wish America loved black people as much as they love black culture. There are so many times that it gets cherry-picked and it gets piggybacked, but only when it's convenient. And sometimes it happens in entertainment and athletics. We're not here designed only to entertain. We're actually living and breathing human beings that have a multitude of intelligence, work ethic, discipline, and talent. We've overcome a lot, just like so many other races. This didn't just start happening. You can Google. We've been sprayed with water hoses. We've been attacked by dogs. We've overcome it. I'm old enough to remember I Have a Dream, Fight the Power, Screw the Police. Now it's I Can't Breathe. This is not new, and it's not going to come from just us. We need people who aren't black. We need people who aren't brown. When you know these things are happening in your society, to have a voice, a legitimate one, lock in step with us, protest with us, post with us, not just when it's convenient, when it can be uncomfortable. The image of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee before a football game during the national anthem is the exact one that we see in Minnesota, when a guy was laying on the ground for over 8 minutes, handcuffed with a knee to his neck. and was murdered. Let's start calling these things what they are. These are murderings. These are lynchings. These things have caused pain throughout our society, for our community, for hundreds of years. We've been screaming out for your assistance and for your help. I hope that now you didn't listen when Martin was saying it. You didn't listen when Malcolm was saying it. I hope that now you can see it on cell phone video camera. You can now understand why we've been rioting from multiple cities for decades, for hundreds of years. That's the role sports can play. See us outside of just being entertainment and walk with us lock in step, even when it's uncomfortable. Because when Colin Kaepernick was taking the knee, he was ostracized, kicked out of the league, and people that didn't look like him did not truly stand next to him.
If there's anything more that can be said than that. Guys, thank you very much for that. And again, I hope this is a place that we can have conversations like this. And if that's the beginning of trying to help, then perhaps we'll be doing something that means something. Anyway, this conversation will continue next. First Take is coming up in just a few minutes here, followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump, then at 4, it's UFC Live, previewing tomorrow night's Fight Night from Las Vegas, a 2-hour SportsCenter at 5, the PTI guys join at 5:30, SVP wraps it up tonight. Full day of sports coming your way right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Disney Plus. All of your favorites all in one place. Sign up today. We're out of time for this week. Stay safe, everybody. Thanks very much for spending your time with us, and we'll see you Monday. First Take starts now.